Morning, everyone. Today's daf in Erevin, daf Samach Beis. We are starting the sixth parak of Erevin today. It's a new day in Erevin, new chapter in Erevin, and new topic in Erevin. Up until now, we talk primarily about Erev Tchumen. We've gone now through five parakim of Erevin. First two parakim dealt with enclosures. How to enclose an area. How to enclose a mavui. How to enclose a chatzer. How to enclose while you're traveling to Yerushalayim. So in other words, parakim numbers 1 and 2, all about how to enclose an area. Parakim 3, 4, and 5, Eruve Tchumen. How to project your Eruv Tchum, your distance that you're allowed to walk on Shabbos, further than the 2,000 Amos, and just that's simply by recentering yourself, and recentering yourself can be done either with food or with you yourself. And that's been Perek Gimel Dalet and Hey. Now we start Perek Vav of Erevin, and with that we begin now the topic of Erev Chatzeros, and we will be here for some time. Parakim 6, 7, and 8 is dedicated to the topic of Eruve Chatzeros. Eruve Chatzeros is what we standardly call Eruv, meaning we, generally speaking, don't do much in terms of Erev Tchum. Very infrequently do we ever have to worry about Tchum. We live in cities and populated areas, and it's not a concern of ours how far we have to walk. Here in Boca is a great example. I mean, you live on the circle. The city of Boca extends for miles, and you could walk for hours and not have walked past Tchum. If you're up in the mountains, you know, I say the mountains, by the way, I'm a New Yorker. So you're up in the mountains, you know, up in the Catskills. Obviously, the Tchum there becomes an issue because there you're really isolated. But in generally speaking, though, Tchum is not much of a concern for us on a week-to-week basis, but Erev Chatzeros, that is a concern for us. When we talk about Erev Chatzeros, we go back now to the Gemara we learned in the beginning of the Masechta that talked about Erev Chatzeros being a Din D'Rabbanan. It's a rabbinic institution, in fact, one of the oldest rabbinic institutions known to us. It was instituted by Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech put two institutions together. Truth of the matter is, Tosfos has already pointed this out earlier. Don't ask me which stuff, I don't remember. But Tosfos pointed out that Shlomo HaMelech put other institutions together, but the ones that are the Gemara praised Shlomo for was the institution of Eruve Chatzeros, and what was the other one? Netilas Yadayim, the requirement to wash your hands before we eat bread. So, but these are two institutions of Shlomo HaMelech, and so now, for the next three prakim, we're going to learn about Shlomo's Gzeira D'Rabbanan of not being able to carry. Now, first, just a primer, just some basics before we start with the Mishnah, and that is the following. What is the concern of Shlomo HaMelech? So the concern is that here we are living in a chatzer. It's an enclosed area. So there are walls around it, right? Especially here in our communities, we live in gated communities. I mean, I don't, but I'm saying we live in gated communities. It's an enclosed area. So min haTorah, can I carry from my house to the courtyard? Yeah, sure, absolutely. Can I carry from my house to somebody else's house? Of course, no problem at all. Meaning, I'm going from one Rishus Yachid to another Rishus Yachid. There is no problem with that whatsoever. Shlomo HaMelech was concerned that if I start carrying from my house to a common property, so what's going to end up happening is that I'm going to say to myself, hey, there's no problem with carrying from a Rishus Yachid to a more public area. Now, I say more public area, halachically speaking, it's a Rishus Yachid, but if you don't have your halachic mind on and you don't have your halachic glasses on, so you start to get comfortable with the idea of I'm taking from a private area to a more public area. Well, once I get that, once I'm in that mode, so now I'm going to carry from my house to a Rosh Hashanah. So as a Gzera D'Rabbanan, so Shlomo HaMelech says, you're not allowed to carry from one Rosh Hashanah to a greater Rosh Hashanah, to a common Rosh Hashanah. Okay.
Shlomo seems to have the same thing as your
Gzera D'Rabbanan. It's a Gzera D'Rabbanan. These are Dinei D'Rabbanan.
Did he have to get a rule from like a Sanhedrin?
Yeah, so I assume so. Meaning, without any real source, I assume, I'm just going to say, that I assume that he did this only with the approval and in conjunction with the Beis Din of his time. Right, on his own, meaning as a king, so a king doesn't institute Dinim, a king, you know, a king protects the people, right? He serves the people, but he doesn't... So I assume when it says Shlomo HaMelech, it means him together with a Beis Din. But, you know, I have to assume that. Good. So what's the institution? So the institution of Erev Chatzeros is very simple. So if the idea is I can't carry from one Rosh Hashanah to another Rosh Hashanah, so what we're going to do very simply is we're going to unify. We're going to take all the Eruve, all the Rishuyos HaYachid, and we're going to combine it and basically coagulate it till it becomes one Rishuyos HaYachid. Unification. So how is unification done? It's like any form of unification. Food becomes the language of unifying. So what we do now is that everybody contributes food, puts the food into a basket, puts the basket into somebody's house. The minhag nowadays is to put it in the shul. And good. And now we have unified through this Erev Chatzeros. Erev Chatzeros is collected from every member of the Chatzer. The food, the bread is collected from every single member of the Chatzer, put into one basket, put into somebody's house. Can somebody say, I don't want to give this week? Well, he could say that, but then we don't have unification. And the Erev is not going to work. So in other words, it's a tricky thing where Erev Chatzeros is accomplished, but it can only be accomplished if everyone contributes. So do you remember now the rabbi coming to your house this past Shabbos, Friday, knocking on your door and saying, hey, could you please contribute to the basket so that we can make an Erev Chatzeros? So you probably don't remember that because it didn't happen. In fact, has it ever happened that someone came over to you and said to you, please contribute to the basket? So no, but that's because nowadays, and I say nowadays, this has been done for years, last centuries, what happens is that Yidei Acher, through somebody else, you contributed. In other words, we have the principle of Zachan Ladim Shalom Befandov, that I can create a zechus for somebody, even without his knowledge or even without his consent. So for every single one of us in this room and for every Jew in the Boca Raton community who is enclosed in the Eruv, so they contributed bread, Ayidei Shliach, through a Shliach, even though we don't even know about it, Zachan Ladim Shalom Befandov.
And a non-Jew that lives
in coming up in the introduction. Okay, so that's the basics. That's really the ABCs of Eruvei Chatzeros.
Now, I had a question for Omer Tchum. I forgot to ask.
Oh, okay.
Before we leave it. If a father makes a Tchum for... Could I work for the family?
Right. So you can make Tchum for... You could do Tchum Ayidei Shliach. You just need... There you need consent.
What he does is not automatically... Does it.
You need consent because that's the last thing we just talked about. Because by Tchum, it's not just a Zechus. When I move Tchum, I'm gaining in one area, but I'm losing in another area. So there we don't say in Zachan La'adam Shalom B'fanav because it's not Zechus.
No, I'm talking about family.
Just in general families? If he's the head of household, and he lays down the law, so then I would say, yeah, I would say that. Not because I'm right, but I would say that. Okay, good. So that's Erev Chatzeros, and that's fine. Our Mishnah, which we're going to first encounter, is going to deal with the following issue. Good, so that's if the Chatzer is made to entirely of Jews. What if there are non-Jews living in? So first of all, they don't have this idea of adding bread to the basket. In other words, there is no Erev Chatzeros when it comes to a non-Jew. On the other hand, he does have ownership, meaning it's a mominous issue. He has ownership in the Chatzer. So what do we do? Meaning how do we treat his residing in the Chatzer vis-a-vis Shabbos and vis-a-vis our interest in unifying the entire Chatzer.
Why are you even asking? Is that a non-Jew doesn't carry it?
Agreed. But the idea is that we want to unify, and if part of the idea of unification is even the non-Jew as well. What we're going to learn this morning is, by a non-Jew, what I need to do is I need to go over to the non-Jew and say, look, right, we have this thing called Erevin. You understand? You don't understand? Or probably don't understand. Okay. As if we understood. But no, we have, that's not true. We have a basic idea. And what we'd like to do for this Shabbos, and truth of the matter is for all future Shabbosim, is we want to rent out your rights to the Chatzer for this Shabbos and all future Shabbosim. Now, of course, they'll look at you and they'll think that you're strange. And today's daf, the Gemara is going to make that observation. He will think that you're strange. And as the Gemara will point out today, we're looking for a goal like that. Actually, that was part of the idea behind this idea of Schirus. And, but either he'll agree or he won't agree. Now, if he doesn't agree, so you're going to have an issue. But if he does agree, so now what you're going to do is you're going to give him some money. And now you have formally rented out the rights to the Chatzer. What exactly do those rights entitle you to? So today's daf, we're going to talk about that. That's coming up in today's daf in terms of what are you actually buying when you're buying rights to the Chatzer. Good.
And the girl cannot use the Chatzer?
Oh, no. He absolutely can use it, but it's not his.
It's not his.
It's not his. And in terms of what you've gained now with this purchase of rights, so the Gemara itself is going to raise that issue today's daf, Samach Beis. And then, so that's schiros of the chatzer of a guy. And then finally, there's one last thing that we need to talk about in our introduction, because also it's coming up today, and that's the following. So by a Jew, you don't rent out a space for a Jew. Either he contributes to the Erev, or what's the other option? So what the other option is that if he doesn't contribute to the basket either because he forgot, he doesn't want to, he was lazy, he forgot, I said that already. So so what do you do? Bittul harishus. So what he can do is he can nullify and negate his rights to the chatzer, relinquish his rights to the chatzer, and simply say, I abstain, or not abstain, but retract from the chatzer. And now, by doing so, he's removing himself from the chatzer. He no longer becomes a factor in this whole process of unification because of his bittul harishus. Bittul harishus is interesting. Can be done even on Shabbos. So that means, let's say we have 10 residents here in the chatzer, 9 contributed, Shabbos comes, we realize, right, Yankel over there didn't give, so on Shabbos itself, he could say, I want to be Mevatel my Rishos. That could be done even on Shabbos. We'll talk more about that over the course of these next three prakim. Good. We'll talk about it. Lot to talk about. I'm just giving broad, very broad strokes to the whole idea of Erev Chatzeres. Okay, we are going to begin now. We're starting now the Mishnah of the sixth parak of Erevin. We're on the bottom of Samach Aleph Amin Beis. Adarim Akum Bechatzer, Oy Mishayinu Moda BeErev, Hareza Oster Alav. If you live together with a non-Jew in a Chatzer, or with somebody who doesn't agree to Erev, meaning there are Jews out there, even to this very day, who basically say, look, I'm bought in, but Torah Bechsav, meaning I'll settle for the written law. But anything which is comes tradition, part of the Mesorah, Torah Shabbal Peh, it's not for me. And he says that regarding Erevin. Well, of course he's going to say it by Erevin. Erevin is the prime example of Torah Shabbal Peh, but not just Torah Shabbal Peh, but Dini Derabanan. Okay, as we talked about just 10 minutes ago. So this guy says, it's not for me. This whole thing is not for me. So now, either a non-Jew or Mishayin Omoda Be'erov, Harizo Ostar Lov. So now he's going to create problems. Because, either one of them. Because, again, the idea is that you need everybody involved, one way or another. For a guy, it's Chiros. For the Jew, it's either contribution or relinquishment. So I need everyone's involvement. If somebody's not involved for whatever reason, so Harizo Ostar Lov. That will prohibit you from being able to carry from your house to the courtyard. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Amar Lo Lamino Ostrachi Shnei Yisrael Moslem Zel Zeh. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says that in a courtyard, it has to be 2 Jews, 1 non-Jew. Meaning, if it's a Jew and a non-Jew, and that's the entire residential community of this chatzir, just 1 Jew and 1 non-Jew, so then there's no need to make an Eruv. We'll explain the position Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov a little bit later on this morning. I'm Rabbi Gamliel, Maisa Bitztuki Achad, and now Rabbi Gamliel tells a story. Now the story that he tells is regarding his father, where father lived in a gated community together with a tzeduki. Okay, tzeduki, one of those types of Jews who was born into Torah Shabbat Chsav, but has not born into Torah Shabbat Peh. Not born in, rejected Torah Shabbat Peh. So Rabbi Gamliel, Maisa Bitztuki Achad, Shaya Dar Imanu Bemavui Beyushalayim, lived with us in a Mavui in Yerushalayim. Va'amar lanu Abba, Ma'aruva Otziu Es Hakelim LeMavui Ashelo Yotzi. And so now I remember, says Rabbi Gamliel, vividly, Dad told us, make sure, hurry up, and take out all the Kelim into the Mavui until he is Achelo Yotzi V'Yotzer. We want to get there before he gets there. What exactly does that mean? So Rashi explains like this. For the Tzduki, what is he going to do? Well, he's not going to contribute to the Erev, because when we asked him, he said, Erev, Chatzeros, Derabanan, no. So in other words, he's not going to contribute to the Erev. So we said, fine, you're not going to contribute to the Erev, but, in other words, you're going to ruin it for all of us. Would you at least relinquish your rights to the Chatzer? Okay, and he'll look and he'll say, according to the first version, fine, I'll relinquish my rights. So what Rami Gamliel said to, what the father Rami Gamliel says to his kids, and Rami Gamliel's reviewing with us this memory that he had, is that what dad would tell us is, take your kelim out to the mavui, meaning do a proprietary act to the chatzer, in this case mavui, so that now we have he's relinquished his right, and we concretize that relinquishment.
In other words, we got there first.
We got there first, and now if he wants to recant and say, "Oh no, no, I'm not being mavata my rishus anymore," it's too late because we did a proprietary act. That is the first version of how we understand this exchange of Rabbi Gamliel and the memory that he gives to us of his father.
Isn't the status of Tzidukim and Nochrim as like Mizra Rabbanon also? The status of
so over here, I mean, Rashi makes this point very clear, and it's obvious just from the context of the story that Tzidukim over here is being treated as a Jew.
No, but I'm saying, the idea that the way we look at these guys and the way you treat them, it's a midrabana. It's a gezer midrabana that we look at a kushi as somebody who's not Jewish, right?
It's not kushi. It's a duki.
I'm not sorry, but the category. The
categorically, it's a duki is a Jew. I mean,
I'm not disputing that. But I'm saying that the way we view them, we look at them halakhically, is midrabana, right? It's a gezer midrabana that we look at.
No, in other words, let's start this again. The way we look at them is that they're a Jew. Okay, they have a belief system that, which is not traditional. Okay, but they're a Jew. They have, in other words, your daughter marries one of them, your grandchild is going to be a Jew. That's it. They're a Jew.
The way we treat them,
we're going to treat them. I mean, we like it if they were more.
I think the question is.
I'm obviously not getting it.
I think the question is, you are considering a Jew because Rabbanan told us to consider.
No, they're Jew because they're Jew, because their mother and father are Jewish. Their grandparents are Jewish. They're Jewish.
No, but they don't get the full benefit of being in the tribe. There are certain restrictions imposed upon them because like Demai and everything. Like,
okay, but right? Sometimes, but in this...
That's all Midrash.
Okay, yeah, but in this case over here, obviously from the story that the Mishnah is telling us, they're giving him full status of a Jew. All right, look, come back to me. I mean, obviously, I'm not totally...
An easier answer will be that compared to today, we have Jews who are Jews who don't hold mitzvahs.
Okay, in other words, the point is in this entire discussion, they're Jewish. We'll try to clarify any better after. So, okay, good. That's version number one of the story. Version number two of the story is Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda Amar B'Lashon Acher, Maharu Va'asu Tzarcheichem Memavui, Ashelo Yotzi V'Yasar Aleichem. Now, according to the second version, Rav Yehuda's version, what Dad told Rabbi Gamliel is, you know what? We have a Tzduki living with us in our courtyard. We're dead. Meaning, there's nothing we're going to be able to do on Shabbos, because even if he relinquishes his Rishus, but he's going to recant on that relinquishment. We know. So you want to do something, you want to take something out of your house, do so before Shabbos. Meaning, we're done. There's nothing we could do on Shabbos itself. Obviously, that's two different versions of basically the same story, with two very different conclusions in terms of what actually can be done. But okay, we'll talk more about that. And that's not coming up today. That's coming up in a future daf. Now, however, for today's daf, however, we're going to be focusing on the relationship between a Jew and a non-Jew living in the same courtyard together. What do we learn in our Mishnah? What we learn in our Mishnah is very clear. That if you have a Jew and a non-Jew living together in a courtyard, so now, and if you want to be able to carry from your house to the chatzer, so what you have to do, you have to be socher. You have to rent the rights from a non-Jew. There is a discussion in our Mishnah, a debate in our Mishnah, whether this is true if it's one Jew and one non-Jew, or do you need two Jews and one non-Jew in order to create this requirement of schiras, of renting? The Gemara opens up the discussion. We're on the top of Samach Beis Amud Aleph. We start now. Yosef, Abai Baravin, Rabbi Chanina Baravin, V'Yosef, Abai Gabai, V'Yosef, V'Kamre. So the Gemara says the whole discussion revolving around Abaye and other Amoraim. Vishlam Rav Meir Kesav Adira Sarai Oviko Chavim Shmadira V'loshna Chav V'loshna Trey. Now, Shitas Rabbi Meir. Right. First of all, the Gemara is assuming that we knew that the Tanakhama of our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. So if we didn't, we now do. Tanakhama of our Mishnah is Rabbi Meir. So now, Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that the residence of a Goy is a residence, period. Meaning, it doesn't matter if there's one non-Jew living there, two non-Jews living there, one Jew, two Jews, doesn't matter. Meaning, any time that I have a chatzer, with a Jew and a non-Jew living in there. So now we have a residence comprised of more than one. We have now a common area, and so therefore we have to take everything into consideration. When it comes to the non-Jew, there's no Eruv, he doesn't contribute to the Eruv, so what we do is we rent out his rights. So Rav Meir makes perfect sense, but El Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, my Kasavar, the problem is, what's Rav Elazar ben Yaakov? Where he says in our Mishnah that only if it's two Jews and a non-Jew, then and only then do we have to worry about the non-Jew living in the courtyard. Why do you need two Jews living in the courtyard? So if he holds that the residence of a non-Jew establishes residence, so therefore, once you have one non-Jew and one Jew living in a chatzer, so okay, so you need to be socher. And if the non-Jew's residence is just simply not factored and not considered a residence, so what difference does it make whether you have one Jew living there, two Jews living there? Meaning, if the residence is just simply not a factor, which seems to be evident by the fact that if it's one Jew and one non-Jew, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov says, you're good, you're fine. So then why would it make a difference now that I have two Jews living in the courtyard? So Amrle Abaye. So Abaye says, the Savra Meir Diras Akum Shmadir Vahatanya. So Abaye, no, it's okay, but before I even answer the question, let me just add a little more fuel to the fire, a couple more issues to take into consideration. That's the following. We have a Tosefta, and the Tosefta reads, mm-hmm. A courtyard of a non-Jew is like a pen. Now, the Gemara over here does not mean this literally, obviously. What the Gemara means over here is that it has no status, meaning that in vis-a-vis Shabbos and vis-a-vis the prohibition of carrying into that chatzer, there is no prohibition, because it's Kedusha Behema, meaning it just simply has no status whatsoever. So now, really, I don't understand. Meaning even Rabbi Meir, meaning we were asking Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, even Rabbi Meir seems to say that Dira's guy is not even a Dira. So if it's not even a Dira, so then what's we're asked about Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, we could back up one step. What about Rabbi Meir? Ella dekulei amadira sakam lo shmei Dira. Okay. So we're going to say like this. Really, fundamentally speaking, the dearest akum, the residence of a non-Jew in a courtyard, does not have the status of residence. So meaning that really, fundamentally speaking, I only need to worry about Jews living in a courtyard, not a non-Jew living in a courtyard. Again, we're speaking now only in the context of Eruv and our ability to carry. So if Dira's guy is not considered a Dira, so the question is obvious. So why do I need to rent space from him? What's that? The Hacha Bigzereshama Yalamed Mimasav. And here it's the Chachamim layering another Gzera on top of the already given institution of Erevin. Yeah, good question. It is a good question. But over here it's not a I'm not sure if I'm going to help the situation over here, but it's not a gzera of Erevin. It's great. In other words, it's a totally separate concern, meaning this is coming out of left field. It happens to dovetail with the whole concept of Erevin. But basically, it's like this, meaning we are influenced by our society around us. That's a given truth. Okay, I know you could try to argue, but it's almost pointless. So so we are influenced by the society around us. If we have Goyim living in our chatzer, so we're going to be influenced. So the Chachamim saying, so if you have a chatzer, and part of the residence of the chatzer is a Goy, you have to be socher. Which is going to lead to the awkward and uncomfortable conversation between the Jew and the Goy. Hi, it's Shabbos. Before we enter Shabbos, we'd like to rent the chatzer from you. He's going to look at you. He's not even going to understand what you're asking. Right? And it's going to create an awkwardness and an uncomfortableness. And check. That's exactly what the Chachamim wanted. They wanted that uncomfortable conversation. So, Shem Yilame Memasav. So, Kamiflagi. So, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov Savar, now that we know that, so now we're going to look back at our Mishnah, and now we're going to gain a somewhat better understanding of our Mishnah. Meaning that really the residence of a guy is not the issue. It's Dira's Akum is not considered a Dira. This is a separate Gzera, our requirement to be Socher, which is a Gzera built on the fact that we want basically to try to discourage a Jew and a non-Jew living in the same chatzar together. It's not prohibited, if I could try to explain the nuanced and the textured discussion that we're having over here. It's not prohibited to live in a chatzar with a non-Jew, but it's strongly discouraged. And part of that discouragement is that we're going to have to rent his rights to the chatzar prior to every Shabbos. By the way, I keep saying prior to every Shabbos. There is a discussion, Rishonim already discussed this, whether the schiris has to be done before each and every Shabbos, or can it be done one time for indefinite use. You probably would guess the halacha. In other words, if I asked you, what do you think the halacha is? Yeah. Right, one time for indefinite use is the halacha. We tend to be makel on these issues.
The non-Jew can relinquish also by...
Huh?
No.
Non-Jew does not have the option of bittul. No. Bittul is only for a Jew.
In a way, that also goes with the spirit of trying to stay away from him. So you're less confident.
Right. Correct. So Kamivla Revla. Now the Gemara says, now that we all got that all that straight, so now we're going to have a better understanding of Rav Elazar ben Yaakov and Rabbi Meir. Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Trei de shchiche de dairei gazur behu chad lo shchiach lo gazur be rabbanan. So from Elazar ben Yaakov's perspective, look, we're talking about gzeira de rabbanan, and gzeira de rabbanan is built on the premise that shelo yelami memasav. We don't want to learn from them. Good. How often is it going to be that we're going to have a courtyard with one Jew and one non-Jew? Very infrequently. We know as a general rule that whenever the Chachamim make any gzeira de rabbanan, they only do it for frequent occurrences. If it's something which is eino shchiach, they're not going to make a gzeira de rabbanan. One Jew, one non-Jew, living in a courtyard together, eino shchiach. That's so uncommon. And the Gemara gives an explanation. The Gemara says, because we're worried about shchiach hazamim. So it could happen, but so infrequently, not enough times for the Chachamim to actually legislate. Once you have two Jews and one non-Jew, that happens with frequency, and so therefore the Chachamim make gzeira d'rabbanan. Rav Meir suffers zimna d'mikra v'dayer, and the Rav Meir says, okay, but still it could happen. You could, if you would like to, I'll suggest it, even though I'm saying this on my own, could suggest that this is Rav Meir l'shitaso, this is Rav Meir consistent with his general viewpoint of he's choshesh l'miyuta, he's worried about even the uncommon occurrences. Okay, maybe. But in other words, but the basic idea over here is that Rav Meir will extend the gzeira d'rabbanan that you have to rent out the space, the rights to the courtyard from a non-Jew, even if it's just a one-on-one scenario. The Amar Rabbanan in Erev Moab b'makom akum vein bitul reshus Moab b'makom akum ashi yaskir. And the Chachamim said that an Erev doesn't work for a non-Jew, bitul reshus doesn't work for a non-Jew. Ad she yaskir, you have to rent out the space. V'akam lo mugar. And what's his position going to be? What? You want me to do what? You want me to rent out what? I don't even understand what you're asking. Oh, okay. And he's going to be, he'll be reluctant, he'll be hesitant. And that's exactly what the Chachamim wanted. Now again, in other words, he may end up agreeing. And good. And y'all now have what we have here in our community, as we have in most Jewish communities. Well, nearly every Jewish community, unless you're up in the bungalows and it's really just Jews and you're making the Erev for just Jews, but in other words, in our communities here in the diaspora, we're always going to have non-Jews living in the community, and so therefore this awkward, uncomfortable conversation will be taking place time and again, and exactly for this reason, the Chachamim wanted it that way. They wanted it to be uncomfortable. So, my time, Eilem, Mishum, Desavad, Dilma, Asil, Achzuk, Birshuso. So I'm sorry. Ashi Aske Vakam Lamugar. My Tamilim Mishum Desavid Del Masil Achzuk Bereshusa. Now, can we better understand his reluctance? So the Gemara says, well, maybe the reluctance of the non-Jew is as follows. First suggestion of the Gemara is because I know what this is. This is a buyout, meaning they're trying to buy me out. First, they're coming at me and asking for my rights to the courtyard, and I know what the next move is going to be. The next move is going to be they're going to want to buy me out. So that's why he's going to say no. He'll be tempted to say no. So hanich laman dar mischiras bria bina and laman dar mischiras ruuya bina maikal meima. Now the Gemara over here alludes to a machlokus, which we're going to see in just a moment. Machlokus amarayim, and that is the following. We now know that there is a din de rabbanan that if I have a non-Jew living in a courtyard, and I want to be able to carry in a courtyard for Shabbos, so all Jews must contribute to the Erev, or be Mevatel Rishus, all non-Jews have to be Socher. This idea of being Socher, what exactly does it entail? Meaning, when I'm buying the rights to what ends? I mean, we know what ends, in order so I can carry. But in other words, the actual transaction itself affords me the ability to do what? So the Gemara over here is going to have a debate amongst the Amoraim. One position is that you need Schiras Bria, a strong rental contract. Obviously, strong is a loose term. We're going to explain what strong means in just a moment. And the other opinion is Schiras Ru'ua, a weak rental contract. So I can understand his reluctance, even though we don't know what the terms mean yet, but still, conceptually. I can understand his reluctance if I require a strong rental contract, because then basically he's going to say, oh no, meaning first the courtyard, then my house, no way. But if it's chiras re'uah, but if it's a weak rental contract, what's going to be his reluctance? The Itmar, the Gemara, now introduces us to this machlokas. Rav Chista Amar Schiras Bria, Rav Sheshes Amar Schiras Ru'uah. There is a machlokas amongst the Amoraim to what degree this rental contract is going to entail. So my Ru'uah, my Bria, and now the Gemara is going to ask the obvious questions. What are we even talking about? Ilay ma Bria Pruta, Ru'uah Pechvachos Mishvei Pruta. Perhaps we're talking about the actual money that's necessary in order to complete this transaction. Where Schiras Bria means I have to give more than a pruta's worth. And Schiras Ru'uah means I have to give even less than a pruta's worth. Now the Gemara says, is there even an idea in entertainment that such a rental contract can be made? You need to give over Sheva Pruta. This idea of over Sheva Pruta, that's a Jewish idea. Meaning, but when it comes to non-Jews and monetary law, so for them, even if it's less than a Sheva Pruta, that still has value. And how do I know that? The Gemara says, I know that based on a number of things. You know, you could create a rental contract even with a dollar amount that's less than a Sheva Pruta. Okay, so first of all, a statement by Rav Yochanan who says it pretty much straight out. So that's how we know it. And also, I'm Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, I'm Rabbi Yochanan ben Noach Ne'arag HaPachas Mishava Pruta. And additional to that is that if a non-Jew steals, you know, the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach, one of the Sheva Mitzvah B'nei Noach is a non-Jew is not allowed to steal. We also know that the punishment for any of the, and I should say any, because that's a machlokas between the Rambam and the Ramban, about Dinim, But in other words, the punishment for any of the negative, let's say it like that, that's a nice, right, any of the lavim of the mitzvahs b'nei Noach is subject to the punishment of death, right? And stealing, usually when we say stealing, so for a Jew to not, Jew on Jew stealing, so it has to be a Sheva Pruta, right? If I steal less than a Sheva Pruta, so it's wrong, it's ethical, it's unethical, it's immoral, but it doesn't, not yet Geneva. For a non-Jew on non-Jew, even less than a Sheva Pruta. And by the way, our discussion over here could also be non-Jew on Jew, meaning if a non-Jew steals from a Jew, there also the dollar amount could be less than a Sheva Pruta. You can take a look at Tosus. Tosus has that discussion over here. I'm not going to get into it right now. But anyway, the point is, v'lonita li shavon, and furthermore, there's no hashava, meaning usually when a Jew steals from another Jew, then there's follow-up by a mitzvah. Oddly enough, what's the mitzvah? Hashavas ha-guzzle. Right? I steal something, so then the heshiv is a gzela. So you can make reimbursement by returning the lost stolen item. Okay, and if the item is gone, so then I can make good on it by paying. All right, but in other words, by a non-Jew, there is no hishavon. There's no returning it. So, again, what we're now in the middle of is just trying to identify what exactly do we mean when we say a schiras bria versus a schiras ru'uah. And it can't be dollar amount because we know that all transactions that deal with a non-Jew doesn't have to be Sheva Pruta. It can be less than a Sheva Pruta. So ella bria b'mohorki v'aborgani, ru'uah b'lo mohorki v'aborgani. So it means like this. The difference between bria versus ru'uah is the difference of what does it allow me to do? Once I make this rental contract with a non-Jew and give him money, and it doesn't have to be a pruta. So what does it allow me to do? So according to one opinion, let me give attribution correctly. According to Rav Chista, what it must allow me to do is that I can put whatever furniture I want in the courtyard, in the common courtyard. So in other words, I say to the non-Jew, here I am, I need to rent out the courtyard from you, and basically I can furnish it the way I want. Okay? That is Rav Chista's opinion. Rav Shesha says, no. Meaning the common courtyard is still the common courtyard. You can't make any type of change or furnishings to the common courtyard. It's just, in other words, it's just a method in which now you are renting out a space, but with no ability to make any change in the common courtyard. That's what's called Schiras Ru'uah. So now the Gemara wonders, again, the Chachamim wanted an awkward and uncomfortable conversation between Jew and non-Jew of the Shur courtyard, so that the non-Jew will be reluctant. Not that he has to say no, but he will be reluctant. So if it's creating a Schiras Briah, where not only you're renting now the common courtyard, but you could do whatever you want, I understand the non-Jew's reluctance. But if it's Schiras Ru'uah, like, is he really going to care? And the Gemara's answer is going to be, yeah, he'll still care. So let me just spell out the Gemara's question. Hanich alaman damer schiras briya bi'inan alaman damer schiras ru'uah bi'inan ma'ika lameymar afilo hachi chashishakum lekshafim v'lo mugar. Excuse me. Yeah, he'll be reluctant. Because he will think to himself, what are the Jews conjuring up? Meaning they want to rent out my courtyard. And they tell me part of the rental contract is they're not going to change anything in the courtyard, but they just want to rent out the courtyard. It sounds spooky. Sounds like the Jews are involved in some sort of magic, some sort of sorcery. I don't like it. And so that's why the non-Jew will be reluctant. And so good, check. Meaning, that's what the Chachamim exactly wanted. So even if it's Schiras Ru'uah, the non-Jew will still be uncomfortable and reluctant to do so. And the Chachamim were shooting for that. They were shooting for that reluctance. Okay, Gufa. Chatzir shalov v'kolcham v'harik kedir shal behema. Umut alahaknis laotzi min achatzal abatim min abatim lechatzir v'yem jesham yisol echad oster divir abi meir. So here now the Gemara is going to go back to a brisa, this Tosefta that we quote on the top of the Amud, quote it again, and try to understand a little bit better. The Tosefta says that if I have a dir shal akum, if I have a chatzir shal akum, so it's like a dir shal behema. Meaning it simply has no status whatsoever. In such a courtyard, I can carry from the house to the courtyard, from the courtyard to the house. Good.
But can it have a deer? What's the point of
that? The point is just simply it has no status. That's all the comparison is just telling us. It just simply has no status. And that's the Divrei Rabbi Meir, and Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, Omer Lo'olamino Osachi Shnei Yisrom Osim Zelzeh. And again, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov in the Tosefta, consistent with what he said back in our Mishnah, which is that all this only becomes an issue if there are two Jews living in the courtyard. But if it's just one Jew and one non-Jew, so the Chachamim did not make any such gezeira. Ad kan Divrei HaTosefta. Amar Mar. We're now on the top of Samach Beis Amud Beis, and we're going to zoom in to the first statement of the Tosefta, which is Chatzir shal akum harei kedir shal behema. The ha'anan tanan hadar ima akum echatzir harei ze oster alav. So the Gemara says, I don't understand. Our Mishnah says that when a Jew lives in a courtyard with a non-Jew, so there have to be schiras. The Brisa of the Tosefta says, oh, you know, the residence of a non-Jew, it's nothing. It's nothing. What do you mean it's nothing? Our Mishnah says it is something. Our Mishnah says you have to rent. So what's the Tosefta even talking about? Lokasha had ise hadalese. So the Gemara says, I'll tell you what the Tosefta is talking about. Uninhabited residence of a non-Jew. Meaning this is going to now open up another really big discussion, which we're only going to be having 10 minutes of today. But it's going to open up another really big discussion. That's the following. We have now been speaking about, in very broad terms, this idea that I have people living in the courtyard and I need to unify everybody. Okay, we live in the capital of houses that are uninhabited. Okay, that's where we live. Either because of the economy or because just we have a lot of snowbirds. But, right, you have a lot of houses that are uninhabited. So, do they need to contribute? What a funny question. Do they need to contribute? They're not here. But in other words, even though they're not here, despite the fact that they're not here, do we have to take that into consideration that they're one of the residential people living in this courtyard? Yes or no? So this is now a major discussion, and the discussion is starting right now. And the discussion includes owned by Jew and owned by non-Jew. Owned by non-Jew, I need to rent. Owned by Jew, he needs to contribute. Okay? So, So the Gemara says, Umayka Safar. So now let's get this straight. Meaning, so you're telling me that the Tosefta, which is talking about the deer shell, sorry, the Chatzar Shel Akum, that's nothing, that's talking about when he's not living in the house. It's a house owned by a non-Jew, but right now, you know, he's up in Jersey. Okay, so ikas of a dira below balam shema dira afi lochem nami nitzer. Vikas of a dira below balam lo shema dira afi lisa nami lo nitzer. So, but frankly speaking, I don't understand. Is a unoccupied house a house? If it is, what difference does it make Jew versus non-Jew? If an unoccupied house is not a house, vis-a-vis this halacha of Erevin, so then what difference does it make Jew or non-Jew if it's not a house? So therefore, if it's a non-Jew, I don't need to rent. And if it's a Jew, he doesn't need to contribute. But this Tosefta makes it sound like it's different. Well, it, fundamentally, where do we stand on this issue of unoccupied houses? La'olam kasav adira b'lo ba'alim lo lo shmei dira. So the Gemara says that really a dira without residence is not considered a dira. Okay, good. So in other words, we now know what the fundamental position is, which is that it's not considered residence.
But this part of the chatzir is still there.
Doesn't matter. Meaning, from a mamonos issue, you're absolutely right. From an Erevin issue, he's not here the Shabbos.
Aren't we considered if you come back any minute?
Okay, hold that thought. That is the correct thought, but just hold it. So in other words, that's the fundamental position. So good. So now I have a scenario where I'm living in a courtyard and there are non-Jews living here, but they're away for Shabbos. I don't have to take them into consideration. Meaning we don't have to arrange any type of rental contract. That's what the Tosefta means when the Tosefta says that the Chatzar Shel Behema is Kedir Shel Behema. I said it wrong, didn't I? The Chatzar Shel Akum is Kedir Shel Behema. Okay, good. That's what the Tosefta means. Our Mishnah is talking about when they're here. When they're here, I have to make a rental contract with them. So far, so good? Great. Now, what about the Jew? Meaning, if you're right, so shouldn't the same distinction be made for a Jew? Meaning, the Jew's living here in our courtyard the Shabbos? Great. If he's not living here, he doesn't have to contribute. Why does it sound like that for a Jew, he's going to need to contribute even if he's not living here this current Shabbos? The Yisrael, that's the next line of the Gemara. So the Gemara says, but for the Jew, continued gzera, meaning you're right. Fundamentally, should he have to give? No. But part of the gzera derabanan of Erevin is that a Jew needs to contribute even if he's not there. But for the non-Jew, we can fall back on the fundamental position, which is an uninhabited house is not considered a house. The Gemara says, okay, but let's take the following into consideration, the Mishnah coming up later on. So if you leave your house and you go and you spend Shabbos somewhere else, both Jew and non-Jew, you're Oster Divrei Rabbi Meir. So now the Gemara says, but didn't we say that the fundamental position is that an uninhabited house is not considered a residence? So how did you understand that Mishnah? Now, Ben, we'll make your point. Hasam Dasa Biyume, there he didn't really go away. Meaning there, he crossed town. But in other words, he can come back today. He has the potential to come back. Then you can't just simply ignore his uninhabited house because there's a very real possibility that he's going to come back. If, however, he goes away and you know he's not coming back, so then you could just simply say his house is fine.
Don't leave him
on. Okay. And for the last 5 minutes of today's daf, we get to talk a little bit now of halach lemaisa. Okay, I threw a lot out there, and don't blame me today. It's really the Gemara. We threw a lot out there today in terms of so many big ideas in terms of the world of Erev Chatzer. I mean, really today we hit on, just, and I'll do the review right now, just very quickly. We hit on the basic ideas of everybody contributing. A non-Jew, there's no, he's not in the world of Erev, but you need to be socher. Somebody who does not contribute his ability to be mevatos, reshus, to relinquish his rights. Why the chachamim? Oh my gosh, so many big ideas. Why the chachamim required us to be socher? Because it's another gzera derabanan shami yilame mimasa. Because we're gonna learn from his actions, and so therefore the chachamim basically wanted to discourage Jew and non-Jew living in the same courtyard together. Okay, so therefore this uncomfortable conversation of how can I rent it out? What exactly that rental agreement entails? Schiras bria versus schiras ruua. The halach is schiras ruua. You're not actually going to change any of the. You're not going to redecorate the courtyard, but still, in other words, you want to rent the rights out. Uninhabited houses. What is that considered? Is that considered housing or is that not considered housing? Vis-a-vis the Hilchos Erevin, halacha is it's not considered housing. But still, even though that's true for a Jew, there's still a requirement for a Jew who owns a home to contribute to the Erev, even if he's not going to live there. And so, okay, and that could be done through a shliach, but okay, that's, again, not for now. And then there was the Mishnah's halachic dispute about this requirement of renting out from a non-Jew. Is that going to be true if it's one Jew and one non-Jew, or only when it's one non-Jew and two Jews living in the same courtyard together? That's a machlokas between the Tanaim. Good. On the machlokas in the Mishnah, between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, who does the halacha follow like? So that's what we get to discuss now for the remainder of today's daf. I'm Rav Yehuda Mishmo Halacha Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. So we'll say it three different ways. The first way we're going to say it is that the halacha follows like Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, and Rashi explains what that means is you stand up in shul, right in front of a big audience, and you say the halacha is like Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Okay, which means that if you have a courtyard with one Jew and one non-Jew, you don't have to rent out his space, his rights. So Rav Huna Amar Minhag Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. The second way we're going to say it is that the minhag is like Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, meaning I don't say it publicly, but I'll tell one-on-one, I'll tell people. And Rav Yochanan Amar, Nago Amke Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Rav Yochanan says that it's done, but no Rav should broadcast it, neither publicly nor privately. Amalei Abayla Rav Yosef, Kaimala Mishnas Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, Kavanaki. Now we have a statement that we say a number of times throughout Shas, so here we get to see it on today's daf. And that is that when you have a Mishnah of Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, it's Kavanaki, it's really refined. Meaning Rav Elazar ben Yaakov doesn't talk a lot, but when he talks, so we all listen. Okay, he made sure that his words were carefully chosen, carefully worded, and then whenever he makes a statement, the halacha falls like him. Good. So v'am Rav Yehuda Mishma halacha k'Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, ma'ala urui b'makom rabba. So now, the Gemara, this really takes us into tomorrow's daf, but we'll start it right now. And the Gemara now wonders, so can I do the following? Now, did you know that if your Rebbe is standing right there in the room or living in the same city as you are, so you can't pasken halacha? Meaning if there's any halachic shayla, if there's any question whatsoever on a halachic matter, and your Rebbe's right there or living in the community, so you can't pasken. Not in front of your Rebbe. Okay? Good. That's the starting point for this discussion. Now, if somebody says to you, can I cook meat and milk together? That's not a shayla. That's just basic Torah knowledge. No, you can't cook meat and milk together. Okay, how about this? How about if the meat wasn't shechted properly, it's nevela, and so, in other words, if it becomes now a discussion, a machlokas, something more nuanced, very technical, so then that becomes now a shayla that you can't do in front of your rabbi. But if it's a really basic question in halacha, it's not a halachic dispute, it's just facts on the ground, so there, even your Rebbe standing right there you can say it right in front of your Rebbe. That's no problem. I wonder now, says the Gemara, we have our Mishnah, we have a machlokes between Rav Meir and Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. Now we know that the halacha follows like Rav Elazar ben Yaakov. We also know Mishnah's Rav Elazar ben Yaakov Kavanaki. So on this matter, can I say the halacha is like Rav Elazar ben Yaakov, even though I'm standing right in front of my Rebbe? Is it in this case as if there's like no disputant of Rav Elazar ben Yaakov? So I'm Amalei, I feel a be'ata b'kuchta. So you can even say over here that you can eat. So somebody asks you, am I allowed to eat egg with milk? Okay, that's a shayla, meaning of course you can eat eggs with milk. So it's so obvious that you're allowed to say it, and presumably what the Gemara's answer is here also, meaning this is also facts on the ground. This is not really a halachic shayla, and therefore you could say it. Now, by the way, there's an interesting discussion. You could see Tosfos inside for this discussion, meaning over here, when the Gemara gives the example of eggs and milk, meaning is that even, I mean, that's so not nuanced, meaning can that even be a question in of itself? Isn't that so obvious? Take a look at Tosfos. Tosfos adds a little bit of nuance to the question of eggs and milk. But basically, the Gemara's answer is, Pasha. I'm meaning obvious. Of course, it's fine. Okay, and tomorrow's daf, really good. I mean, interesting daf tomorrow. Mara halacha b'fnei rabo. Paskening halacha in front of your rebbe. That's tomorrow's daf almost in its entirety. Okay, stay tuned. But in the meantime, however, we started today Erev Chatzeros, and much coming up ahead. Continue refuah shlema from Binyamin Zevakon Ben Sharon Rivka, four falls like Avram Ben Yakira Abigail. Le'ilui nishmas Rav Yaakov ben Yosef. Rav Chananya ben Akash Mera Tzakar Shabbat Mitzak Yisrael Ficha. Here by Mitzvah Mitzvah Shenem Anecha Veitzim Antikoya Gutra Biyadir.